Come join me, Andrew Filippone.
And me, Patrick Peterson, three-time NFL All-Pro cornerback on First and Pod for premier NFL coverage and conversations.
Our motto on the podcast is every team, every week, and we don't play favorites. Every episode, you get a glimpse of the entire National Football League with First and Pod. Follow and listen to First and Pod on Mondays and Fridays on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Final hour of the Rob Brown Show is underway. Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. Rob and Lonzo with you, rolling through a lovely upstate Friday morning. We have got a slam-packed day of NFL football on Sunday. We have got one of the better college football weekends about to start that we have had in a hot minute, but you know, the show all starts up on Friday nights under the light and some Tuesday nights and Thursday nights. I think there's a couple of Monday nights too. It's a weird year this year thanks to the hurricane in high school football, but there is high school football nonetheless. And to break all of that down, joining us on the live stream, which you can watch at facebook.com/thefanupstate, the Fan Upstate on YouTube, or the Rob Brown Show on Facebook, YouTube, or Twitch, because we're tech savvy up in here. Joining us now on the show from the Moving the Chains podcast, my guy, Kevin Thomas, in the house. KT, what's up, big fella?
Rob, good seeing you, man. An exciting Friday here. You know, it's typically the last week of the season, but this year it is not due to the extension, so excited to have a few more weeks of football in here.
Yeah, couple of extra weeks to make up for some of the time that was lost. Are we relatively mostly caught up with the games that that got put off by the hurricane?
For the most part, you know, some teams were playing some, you know, couple games a week type deal for a while, but that is mostly done with now. So we'll see a normal slate this Friday, and then some games next Friday. They'll be into the playoffs, so we're pretty much back to a normal once a week type schedule now, and it should be wrapping up here shortly.
I love it. All right, let's get into real quickly last week's matchups. Was there anything that jumped out, any abnormal, any upsets, anything that changed playoff thoughts, hopes, aspirations, etc., that you want to bring up for the folks?
I mean, I'll say the big upset last week was Dorman knocking off Gaffney 9-7, and a surprising ball game. The Indians have been rolling, but the offense has kind of disappeared the last couple of weeks, Rob, and that's a little bit of a concern there for them. Dorman, they're really big and physical up front. You know, they lost to Burns a few weeks back before the hurricane. They've had a lot of problems scoring the football, but that defense held Gaffney in check just enough for them to kick a field goal there late and win that one.
Love it. Also joining us now on the show, hey, got out of bed, John Epps is in the house. What's up, big dog?
What's going on? The sun's almost up.
We're working on it, buddy. It's still early. I've only been here 5 hours. It's still early. John Epps, I'll ask you the same question I just asked Kevin a minute ago. Anything last weekend that jumped out to you that you wanted to talk about today?
You know, I think the big thing in the lower classification, Hunter Kenner Tyler, well, a huge blowout of Blackville Hilda. Two good teams, but it was incredible to see HKT just blow them out like they did. I think that final score was 56-17. Gotta give love to the little guys sometimes.
I like that. All right, let's jump into tonight's slate, fellas, and we'll start off with a game that you will hear right here on the Fan Upstate. Of course, the host of Wire to Wire, Cole Bryson, along with Diesel. He'll be live out at Boiling Springs as the Bulldogs get set to host the Rebels this evening. Of course, last week, not what Burns had hoped would happen. They had started to build some momentum. Obviously, tough to do it this year. All road games for this season for the Rebels. They're on the road again, John Epps, at Boiling Springs tonight.
Yeah, you know, I've actually been impressed with Burns this year. They start off slow. They've played pretty good defense all year. Spartanburg just found themselves last week. You know, they ran into a buzzsaw against the Vikings. But Burns has been doing well. They've been doing well in region play. You know, this is going to be a really big game for them for playoff seeding-wise. Boiling Springs has had a great season themselves. Kyle Patterson is a really good threat on the outside for the Bulldogs. They got Jeremiah Favorite in the secondary. He's playing big as well this year. He's got four interceptions. I think Boiling Springs has got a little bit more talent offensively that will get them ahead of this one in this game. We got two good defenses going at in this ball game, but I think Boiling Springs with a little bit more electricity, a little bit more talent on the offensive side of the ball. I see another typical Burns game, though, that we've seen this year, a low-scoring, close ball game.
I dig it. I dig it. Let's go back, Kevin. St. Joe's at Powdersville this evening.
A good 3A matchup. Powdersville can clinch the region with the win. If St. Joe's wins, it'll go down to next week and their matchup with Christchurch. But the Patriots, man, they started off 0-3 non-region, have won now 5 in a row. Gotten really hot at the right time for Coach Mustard, running the football. They got the new quarterback that's been breaking in, and Elijah Huggins there is a big-time playmaker, but the defense is playing well. Always a solid recipe for success is run the ball and play defense. They're doing a lot of that right now. St. Joe's last week, John, or Rob, William Gillespie, 13 carries, a buck 53, four touchdowns, seven tackles, a tackle for loss, a fumble recovery, and a successful onside kick. So he was all over the field there for the Knights, man. A team that people didn't expect a whole lot from with a new head coach this year, but are playing really good football. I think Powdersville, though, too much firepower. I think they win at home and clinch the region tonight.
All right, let's move it on to Wren at West Side, John Epps.
Yeah, this is a region championship here for Region 1 and 4A. Both teams undefeated currently in region play. I think Wren is a, and I'm going to preface this, Wren is a really good football team. And they've been playing really well this season. I think they're good enough to make this game competitive. They've got Reese Price in the backfield for them. He's had a great season. But the weapons that Westside has, and it's not just on offense. Defensively, they're ball hawking all year. And then in special teams is where the Rams really, really make a difference. And I think if this game, if we see this game close going into the fourth quarter, I see a special teams play being the difference. You got Armani Weaver back there that's been just absolutely lethal. I said on our show Tuesday, if you run, don't kick the ball to him. Punt it out of bounds. Squib kick, kickoffs, do whatever you can to not let him make a big play on special teams and really flip momentum. I think Westside's just got too much talent on all three sides of the football in this game. I hope Wren makes it competitive. I hope it's a close game. I just think if it is a close game, Westside's got enough talent and will find a way to win the game in the fourth quarter.
Armani Weaver, they called him Money, former Burns kid who did that to a lot of teams last year, without a doubt. Kevin Greenwood is at Hillcrest, the Rams at the house tonight.
Really big game here. This region is still completely up for grabs. Both these teams have one loss in region play, along with J.L. Mann and T.L. Hanna also. So we got a big tie at the top at the moment there, so this will go a long way to deciding this. Greenwood has played really good football this year with Tristan Lewis and Elijah Wade and Trey Crawford, a little bit more of a spread-it-out Greenwood team than you would have seen in years past. They really get the job done on offense right now. Hillcrest found something last week, man. They had 600-plus yards of offense against Woodmont. Caleb Sutton in big game. Starks and Johnson on the ground. Weston Willis just picked up a Furman offer. A receiver had a big game as well for them. And this game is also big, you know, Rob, with them splitting up the 5A this year. Even if you don't win your region, you could potentially get a first-round bye due to the way they're going to do the seeding. So winning this game, even if you lose the region, you know, maybe next week or whatever, this is a really big one for seeding purposes. I think the Rams found something offensively. They looked really crisp last week, and playing at Chandler Stadium, too, should be a great environment. Should be a fun matchup tonight between those two teams.
All right, let's take a look at some of the other ones going on around the upstate, around the state tonight. And I'm going to tell you, one of the things I found interesting, man, I don't know that there may be bigger fan bases. I don't know if there's a fan base that has cared more or sent more messages asking for you guys to break down games than Greer on the road at Daniel tonight.
Greer, yeah, man. I tell you what, Greer. Sorry, Kev, go ahead.
No, you take it, John. You take it.
Yeah, Greer's had a great season. They're undefeated in Region 2 over there. They've had a really good resurgence. You know, Greer, a very proud program. Haven't been great last few years. Didn't know they were going to be that good this year, to be honest with you. And they have really, really played well. Playing for the region championship tonight against Daniel. I want to see, Rob, I want to see this game be competitive. but Daniel is really, really good. I think Greer's good enough to make this a game. I don't know that's going to be one that goes in the Yellow Jackets' favor. Daniel is just that good. They're that good every year. But I hope we see a great game. This game is over in Central. Love for it to be under the water tower, give Greer a little bit of a better shot. But they've had a great season. They're going to go to the playoffs no matter what happens tonight. And you have to pull for Greer after the last few years they've had. Lost one of their best players, LaDainian Martin, last year as well. But, hey, they have hauled the mail this year, and they have been really, really good. I'm pulling for them in the playoffs.
I like it. Kevin, talk to me about Greenville at J.L. Mann.
J.L. Mann, the clear favorite here. This is always a fun game. This is, I guess you call it the Spirit Week. You know, I heard there's close to $1 million being raised right now for charity between these two schools. They always do a great job. I also heard a rumor of a Mark Wahlberg cutting a $100,000 check for Greenville. Not really sure if we can confirm that or not, but a really cool story. These two guys always match up well and do a great thing for the community, but JLN, too much firepower, man. They're playing great football right now. Henderson and Martin, like John mentioned, and Morrison. Coach Watson's team is poised for a deep playoff run. Greenville, year one under J-Bo Shaw, not quite at that level right now. I think the Patriots roll.
Spartanburg Vikings, you said it a minute ago, John Epps, found themselves against the Rebels a little bit last week. They take it on the road at Riverside.
Yes, yeah, Spartanburg this year, and really under Coach Hodge, it's been the same script of, boy, they can play some really good defense, but they can't score. Well, last week, that was not the problem at all. Lighting up the scoreboard for 58 points. Spartanburg is 6-1 this season. And Kev, correct me if I'm wrong, I want to say their one loss was the Dutch Fork.
Correct, yep.
Who they beat last year. So Dutch Fork had some revenge on them this year. They're undefeated in region play, of course. Spartanburg is playing their best football at a really, really good time. Riverside's had a decent year themselves. They're 4-3 on the year. I think they're just catching this Viking squad at a bad time. I think Spartanburg wins this game. And if they can keep that offense rolling, I don't think it's going to be too close. We'll see if they can do it 2 weeks in a row. If they can, boy, 5A, look out. Spartanburg could be trouble.
Kevin Thomas, John Epps from the Moving the Chains podcast. Join us every Friday at 9 o'clock straight up on the dot to talk high school football. Where the boys going to be hanging out tonight, Kev?
Heading down to Saluda, a big 2A matchup. Batesburg, Leesville at Saluda, a little more towards the Midlands, but should be a really fun one down to those lower classes.
All right, real quick, before we let you go, Zach said you should ask Kevin and the boys about the Marlboro County football situation down in the lower state. Am I going to regret asking the boys about the Marlboro County football situation down in the lower state?
It's a long story, Rob, but we'll just say it's ongoing, but there is use of multiple ineligible players is what is going on now, so... Yeah, there's still some appeals going on and whatnot, but for as of now, the Bulldog season is over. But we'll see how that shakes out next week or so.
I Googled it while you were explaining it, and have found that Marlboro County banned from football state playoffs by South Carolina High School League, and that article is on Sports Illustrated. This is apparently a thing.
Yeah, you know, it's one of those regional Sports Illustrated, you could say, I guess, you know, where they have the certain areas they kind of cover. Not the big magazine, but yeah, it's a interesting decision. You know, we've had some reports from the district that they were, you know, had these athletes cleared two times, and now they're coming back and saying they're ineligible. So a little bit of back and forth. He said, she said, who's living where, whose parents' names on what lease, yada, yada, yada. A lot to be gone through still. You know, they went into the meeting Wednesday saying that they had 8 ineligible players. Coming out of that meeting, they believe the number may only be 2 now, and they're going to review those 2 as well. So it's not done yet. We'll put it that way.
Fun! That seems fun. Kevin Thomas, John Epps from the Moving the Chains podcast. You can find them on all the social media at Moving Chains. You can also check them out on X. We're going live tonight, as always, I'm assuming.
Yes, sir.
The boys do a live wrap-up show on X. If you go find them there at Moving Chains, they'll give you scores and stats from around the state as they roll in. Fellas, appreciate it. As always, boys, well done.
Appreciate it.
Looking good, Rob.
Yeah, man. Yeah, man. Kevin Thomas, John Epps. Moving Chains on Twitter, on Instagram, on Facebook, all that. You can find their website at Moving Chains, no G, movingchains.com. And find the podcast wherever podcasts are found. Boys, enjoy the football tonight. And good luck to Los Tigres against Louisville coming up this weekend. A little bit of a trap game there.
Yeah, Louisville, they always play wild games, it seems like, and I don't want to be a part of one, but here we are.
They got a good quarterback. We'll see what happens.
They do have a good quarterback. We're going to talk Clemson and Louisville, as well as South Carolina and Texas A&M when we come back. John and Kev, appreciate it as always. Moving Chains and the Moving the Chains podcast. We're back after this on the Rob Brown Show on the Fan Upstate.
Come join me, Andrew Filippone.
And me, Patrick Peterson, three-time NFL All-Pro cornerback on First and Pod for premier NFL coverage and conversations.
Our motto on the podcast is every team, every week, and we don't play favorites. Every episode, you get a glimpse of the entire National Football League with First and Pod. Follow and listen to First and Pod on Mondays and Fridays on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Clemson taking on Cardinals this Saturday, back at the crib, back at the house. Is this a trap game? I've heard a couple of people call it a trap game so far this morning. Is this a trap game? I got to tell you, I think the scenario for which we could return on Monday and say it is a trap game is there. We have John Blau from the Post and Courier, who covers Clemson on every Monday. And when we talked to him, his take was very similar to mine, which is you enter a somewhat tricky stretch of the schedule here for Clemson, right? Because there's basically a three-game set coming up after the win over Virginia. There's a three-game set that aren't against particularly talented football teams, with maybe the exception of Pitt waiting for you.
Pittsburgh's ranked 18th.
Right.
So, I mean,
with the exception of Pittsburgh waiting for you in the third week. But I don't think, like, if you look at them on paper, Pittsburgh's not as talented as Clemson. That's not, I'm not, you know, burning anybody's speakers up with that particularly hot take. The issue with Pittsburgh is that, number one, it is on the road. And more importantly, I think, it is on the road after you have a three-game set against three very different teams in three very different scenarios, right? You've got Louisville coming to the house this weekend. And this is a Cardinal team that, as has been brought up a couple of times so far, has got a very, very interesting offense that Jeff Brohm has put together behind Tyler Shough. This is a quarterback that is very nearly at 2,500 yards with 20 touchdowns so far. The kid can play. Very interesting running back in Isaac Brown, who is a talented player. But Isaac Brown at 5'9", 190, it's more about the versatility. It's about the fact that they can utilize him in a lot of different ways, which makes it a little bit more difficult to create extra blitzers to try to get after Tyler Shough. This cat has time in the pocket for Louisville. Ja'Cory Brooks, the number one wide receiver, 44 grabs, 800 yards receiving on the season so far for Louisville through eight games. He's averaging 100 yards per game for Louisville. This is an interesting Louisville Cardinal team. I will tell you that. Again, not that this is anything that should directly tell you how the game is going to go. It just tells you what people think. Clemson's a 10-point favorite in this game, which means obviously Louisville's a 10-point dog in this game. And the majority of the money so far is coming in on a Louisville Cardinal cover. Now, you know me, I'm a big fade the public guy. If I see a line that's bringing in 80%+ of the bets, or even somewhere around, you know, 78%, 79% of the bets on one side, almost exclusively I bet the other way. Because when the public jumps on a number like that and Vegas doesn't change it in response, it means they're very confident. A lot of the money coming in on Louisville. So on one hand, it says to me the public believes that Louisville can make this a game. But the fact that that number is hanging out at that 10 and not being changed by Las Vegas, it says to me Vegas has a lot of confidence that Clemson is going to be able to successfully cover up that number on Saturday. I right now, I don't have a particularly strong lean either way. I think the 10-point line is a very good line. I'm not worried about the Louisville game. I shouldn't be worried about the Louisville game. But that's my fear. You're on the road at Blacksburg, Virginia next week. You're heading up to the land where Marty Smith said holds. Is the home of what Marty Smith told us earlier in the show, what he believes to be, and granted, he's biased. It's where he's from. Maybe the most intimidating entrance walkout in all of college football when Enter Sandman blares into the night at Virginia Tech. If Clemson is peaking, right, and I don't mean peaking as in hitting the best of their football ability. I mean if they are looking ahead to that Virginia Tech game, Louisville can shock somebody. This is a team that when they are on absolutely has the capable of putting a 40 burger up. They did it against Jacksonville State. They dropped 62 on Austin Peay, what they should do. 31 against Georgia Tech. 24 on the road at Notre Dame, a one-score game that Louisville absolutely could have won. SMU was Lonzo's pick to win the ACC this year. One-score game. Lost by 7 in a game that was very much down to the limit. I go back to the Virginia game. 24 in that game. They put up 45 against Miami, and there's a lot of people, again, including Marty Smith from ESPN, who we talked to earlier in the week and played that interview for you. If you missed our interview with ESPN's Marty Smith, it'll be posted on the podcast form sometime shortly after the show goes off the air. Marty Smith said, Miami got away with one against Louisville, and I agree with that. Coulda, shoulda, woulda beat the Miami Hurricanes. If they can put 45 on Miami, I do think Clemson's a better team than Miami. That is one thing Marty said I very much agreed with. I think Clemson, at least on paper, is a better football team than Miami right now. But if Louisville can do that against Miami, they can do it against Clemson. So if Clemson's peaking, and again, that's peaking with two E's, not an E and an A, and they got caught looking ahead towards Virginia Tech, this can be a scary game. This could be a tricky game against the Louisville Cardinal. I like Clemson to outright win. I don't think that there is an upset L coming. But again, if that sense of overconfidence that I have in this game, if that sense of overconfidence is held by the Clemson Tiger football team in this game, Louisville can surprise you. Louisville can jump up and grab you. So this to me is a big time game for Clemson in that it will prove to me that mentally they're in a good spot. They understand it is game by game. The spot you're in with that loss to Georgia back in week one, there is no margin for error here. All right. There just isn't. I mean, you can be a one loss team and still get bumped out of the ACC title game. You could be a one-loss team and in it. There is a path for Clemson to lose an ACC game and still end up in the ACC title game. I don't want to roll the dice on that. Do you? I don't want to roll the dice on that. I don't want to be looking at a 5-1 SMU team. I don't want to be looking at an SMU team who also has one loss that is out of conference and be rolling the dice here, especially when you were at a point where, again, tinfoil cap engage. The conspiracy theory that at least it sounds, I'm not going to say that, you know, I'm totally bought into it. I will say I'm not totally bought out of it, that the ACC is maybe protecting Miami a little bit. All right. I do not believe there is a spot where a conference calls a group of officials and goes, hey, we need to make sure that Miami gets the benefit of the doubt. But I do believe that there is an inherent bias. This is part of the reason I'm Team Robo-Ump. I do believe there is an inherent bias that some referees may tend to fall victim to that protects all-stars, right? We know it's true in the NBA. We got a name for it, the Jordan rules. We know that it is true when it comes to, say, Duke Blue Devil college basketball. We do know that it has been true for years with, say, the University of Alabama football, that the superstars, the big dogs, the names, the blue collars, or the blue bloods, I should say, they get a little preferential treatment when it's time to blow a whistle or not. I think Miami has been, intentionally or not, a little bit protected by stripes this year, meaning the likelihood Miami is finishing this season with an undefeated record is greater than zero. It's greater than zero. And considering if you are Clemson, you don't get a crack at Miami in the regular season to make up for that. Here's who Miami's got left. Duke at Georgia Tech, Wake Forest, and Syracuse. Y'all, the teams that could take down Miami are off. They're done. They've all lost to Miami. So to me, the race the rest of the way through is one loss, non-conference loss, SMU, versus one loss and non-conference loss, Clemson, for the second spot to who's going to challenge Miami. And again, I'll tell you right now, if you put Clemson and Miami together in the ACC title game, I'm significantly less concerned about inherent accidental biased officiating that benefits Miami, because Clemson has that same star power, has that same probably deserved star treatment. I think Clemson can beat Miami in an ACC title game. What I can't have is Clemson gets tripped up because they're looking ahead to Blacksburg, Virginia, or they're looking ahead to the only remaining ranked team on the schedule, Pittsburgh, 2 weeks away, and Tyler Shough comes out and throws for 350, three tutties, and scares you a little bit. Is it a trap game for Clemson? I'll say this. It absolutely meets all the qualifications to be called a trap game. Clemson can prove that they are as mentally solid as we have thought they were the last couple of weeks by getting this one, getting it early, and making sure it's not competitive down the stretch. Then we talk about Blacksburg, Virginia. Let's talk South Carolina, Texas A&M when we come back on the Rob Brown Show in the Fan Upstate. South Carolina Gamecocks at the Hizzle for Shizzle this weekend as the cult of Texas A&M comes to town. What's your read on this game, Alonzo? You got a Texas A&M team that loves to run the ball with a pair of quarterbacks led by Connor Wegman. You've got a Texas A&M team that under Mike Elko is as if not more disciplined than they ever were during their time with Jimbo Fisher. And we know that they, despite having a hemorrhaging of talent during the offseason via the transfer portal, still have a ton of talent. This is, to me, and I feel like we're saying this at every week, and I hope we're not saying it so much that it is taking away from the weight of the statement, but this to me feels like the most important game Shane Beamer's coached as a Gamecock, because if he's competitive, I'm not even saying win, if he is competitive in this game and he shows that what they built in Oklahoma is now part of the team and not a flash in the pan, then all of a sudden I think the faith and belief that Shane Beamer is the guy, like Marty Smith says he was, goes to the moon. If South Carolina comes out, they shoot themselves in the own foot and they allow Texas A&M to just beat the hell out of them, I think we're right back to ground zero.
Well, I'm going to go back to, you just talked about Marty Smith, something that he said, if they learn how to finish. Because they've been in games, the couple that they, I mean, they've had one.
LSU, Alabama.
And they've had one bad game. But if they knew how to finish, those games would have been more than likely South Carolina victories. So I have a quiet optimism about Saturday. That if the defense can play up to how they've been playing and slow Texas A&M down, it's really up to can South Carolina's offense finally start clicking? Because that's been the thing, that's been the problem, it's been the offense. And I don't know if it's necessarily just Sellers needing to and is improving every week, but I think it's the offense. And there's rumors, don't know if it's going to happen, that the goggles might be back, the glasses might be back this week.
The rec specs, I feel like, are the hair of Samson, right? Like, bring that man's rec specs back. I've given you my thoughts, my criticism, my critiques, whatever you want to call it, of Lenora Sellers, who I am a fan of as a dude and as a football player. And I don't put this on Lenora Sellers, but I've said it a couple of times. I'm not seeing the growth I'd like to see out of Lenora Sellers, right? Like, I'm not seeing a football player that in week 9 I can point at and say is definitely better than he was in week 1. I think there are spots where you see the flashes of brilliance. And then there is, and this is not necessarily me saying it, there's a ton of texters over the past couple of weeks that have said South Carolina better put these games away earlier, like they did against Oklahoma, because Lenora Sellers down the stretch in games has not been great. The Alabama game, again, I know we kind of have been beating this dead horse relentlessly for a few weeks now, but you know, you get the onside kick against Alabama that puts you in a position to have maybe one of the greatest finishes in college football history. If you win that game on the road at Alabama the week after getting pounded by Ole Miss, you win that game. That's a game that, like, is being recreated in college football 2025 as a playable situation, right? Lead Shane Beamer's Gamecocks, defend the house from the Gamecocks if you're the Tide. Like, that comes down to be one of the most historic finishes in college football history if you do something. And Lenora Sellers, as far as I'm concerned, just made a mistake. And yeah, it's going to happen. It's going to happen. Mistakes happen. But you can't. I can't have that mistake in that part. I can't have Lenora Sellers not just wing the ball up over a receiver's head down the sideline and at least give myself one more chance. Instead, he just kind of mortar shells it down the field and it gets picked off without a Gamecock within 10 yards. I can't have that. So, again, I put a lack of growth. I put a lack of development. I put a, frankly, lack of situational awareness around this kid in his first year at QB1 on the coaching staff. And I, for the record, I think Shane Beamer does too, right? We talked to Emily Adams yesterday. You heard from Marty Smith earlier today that said it's driving Shane Beamer mad, these late game mistakes that are being made right now. And I get it. I think I would feel the same way. But I got to have some growth out of the kid. I agree. I agree with that take about Lenoris. I agree with the take about the offense. Here's the thing. South Carolina being on the bye last week, I got to tell you, if I'm Shane, if I'm Dow Loggins, if I'm the Gamecock coaching staff, I hope the entire bye week was spent doing nothing but working with Lenora Sellers. Like, I know you got to work on the offense. You got to get Raheem Sanders better, right? I got to get him more comfortable. Offensive line's got to play better in certain spots down the stretch. I do chalk up a lot of the second half against Oklahoma, which, you know, Lonzo and I both agreed. There was absolutely no reason to throttle down against Oklahoma. And we do agree they both throttled down.
Oh, without a doubt.
Yeah. There was no reason to throttle down. The only reason is in a situation like that, that you would throttle down is to keep guys healthy, right? Is to keep guys healthy. It's a different story in that game if, say, South Carolina's undefeated and in line to an SEC title game. Then maybe I go, okay, throttle down, like, relax. But in that spot, if you're in that position, like a Georgia, like a Texas A&M, you've probably already shown you are SEC championship caliber. South Carolina had not. There's no playoff bid in place for the Gamecocks this year. And if that's the case, and I'm not saying like there's not, like it doesn't exist. There actually is a non-statistically insignificant chance that the Gamecocks need a ton of help. But they're still alive. Realistically, there's not a path to the SEC championship game for the South Carolina Gamecocks. And if that is the case, Go hang a 50 burger on Oklahoma, right? Utilize that time. You know what it kind of sparked my memory of just a minute ago? Back on Monday when we were talking, wrapping up the NFL football weekend, we had a texter that wrote into the show. And the texter was like, why would Sean Payton run up the score against Carolina? Was he like trying to embarrass them? Was he hanging on to some negative emotions from the time that he was the Saints quarterback and this was a rivalry? And my answer was no. Sean Payton hung a 50 burger up on you because the Denver Broncos are in a wild card spot, though it is an outlier. It's a wild card spot in that division, obviously. They're in a wild card spot. And when you get to week 15, 16, 17, 18 in the NFL schedule, you may be in a spot where we have to win. We win a play. We win this game. We're in the playoffs, whatever. And if that's the case, you need to be able to go to every trick in the book. And to make sure that you're ready to go to every trick in the book, you've got to be able to run the tricks against the NFL defenses in a live situation to go, okay, we screwed up. Why? How do we fix it? How do we clean it up? Whatever. And unfortunately, because the Carolina Panthers are A, bad, and we're B, getting their asses kicked in that spot, you just happen to turn yourself into the laboratory with which Sean Payton was able to experiment, right? Well, the opposite should have been true for South Carolina last week. You should have used Oklahoma as the laboratory offensively in the second half that you went out and showed that you've got the capability to run it up, to stay disciplined when you need to. You didn't take advantage of that. So I hope that the off week was spent putting time into Lenora Sellers, running through him different situations, you know, different looks A&M might get, et cetera, basically creating a world where Lenora is able to feel a heck of a lot more comfortable if you bump into a high-pressure situation. Because, look, if South Carolina ends up competitive in this game, there's no blowout against A&M. I hope I'm wrong. But I do not see a world in which South Carolina is leading by 24 points going into the fourth quarter.
Okay, because you keep saying, you know, if they're competitive, so you don't think they have a shot at winning.
Not that they don't have a shot, but they're a nearly 2-touchdown underdog for a reason, right? Like this is one of the things that I think it's important to do. You can say there's a shot while also recognize it's going to take a special performance to win. What I'm looking for out of this Gamecock team this weekend, what I'm looking for is competitiveness. What I'm looking for is to see a team that is out there that, oh, by the way, just so we're clear, I looked at the line when they were released on Sunday. It was like 5.5, 6.5, depending on the book you looked at. South Carolina +3, which means, and exactly what I said, because you catch three in college football, you can catch up to a full touchdown playing at the house. Vegas thinks you're effectively a touchdown worse than Texas A&M. You're +3. +125 on the money line is not nearly as egregious, as outlandish as I thought the line might be. This was one of the few that I've screwed up this week. I really thought that line was probably going to be closer to Texas A&M -5.5. +3 is, that's a good line. It's not a good line to bet on. I don't want to bet that line. It's a good line for South Carolina in showing that Vegas thinks you're going to be right in this contest. And if that's the case, what does that mean? What happens in that spot? If that is honestly the case, if you're a 3-point dog, what it says to me is you are going to be in a fourth quarter fist fight. Like I said, I don't think there's a reality in which South Carolina is up coming into the second half like they were against Oklahoma, because that's a bad football team. I think there is a chance this is a one-score game going in the fourth quarter, which means there is going to be pressure on Lenora Sellers in the offense. I need to know that since that Bama game, because there was no pressure, thanks to your defense, there was no pressure at any point in that Oklahoma game. Have you learned from those mistakes? Have you learned how to handle the pressure? And if the answer is yes, South Carolina's got a chance in this game. If the answer is no, it'll be a sad night in Columbia, South Carolina.
I already lost, but at least I remember to push the button this time. Time to ask Rob what is X, and he's going to tell us why for sure, because he's going to know all this stuff why. The first thing that's Xing is Whoppers.
Whoppers. There's so many different ways we could go with this one. Whoppers is trending because
Hooters was also trending, but I'm not using that because it's trending for a totally different reason.
Yeah, I actually hilariously know the reason that Hooters is trending. Yeah,
but we're not going to talk about that because it's too political. Let's go Whoppers.
Oh, no, I saw a different thing. There was a story going around yesterday about a guy that was on some podcast that said that his wife was complaining because she didn't want to be a stay-at-home mom, and so she went and got a job at Hooters, and then he ended up catching her cheating on him like 2 weeks later with a line cook. And he was like, you were staying at home with a guy who's making millions of dollars. You got a job at Hooters because you were bored and it was easy, and then you left me for a line cook. But Whoppers is trending because people incorrectly are complaining about last night getting Whoppers as trick-or-treat candy. I don't know that this is the reason. It's my guess. Whoppers are delicious. Fight me.
See, here's the other thing. You know, despite our political differences, there are so many things that Rob and I agree on.
Like Whoppers being good.
Which is why the chemistry is so good. Whoppers is it's good. Yeah. I don't get why people hate them.
There are things I understand they hate. I do like candy corn. I understand the candy corn hate. Okay?
I like candy corn. I don't love it.
Sure.
I'm not going to go, oh, don't put that stuff next to me. If it's, you know, if I need some candy and it's what's available, I'm eating it.
There's two types of people. There are people for whom candy corn is acceptable, and then there are people who despise it, and they make it part of their personality around Halloween time. They despise it. Whoppers, I don't get. Whoppers are, they're genuinely good. If I'm in a candy aisle, there's as good a chance I'm picking up a mini box of Whoppers as there is anything else.
Yeah, and it's also, I mean, it's not being the contrarian person go, well, no one's going to eat the Whoppers, so I know I'm going to have plenty of extra candy. They're good.
Yeah. I like a Whopper.
They are. I don't understand the hatred of the Whopper. All right, the next thing that's Xing is Mariah Carey.
Mariah Carey is trending because as it is November 1st and Halloween is past, it is officially time for the Queen of Christmas to arise from her slumber and begin pleasuring our ear holes with the lovely sounds of All I Want Is Christmas Is You.
I need to research this for the Pulse tomorrow, but there were lawsuits against her declaring herself Queen of Christmas. I wonder if those have been settled yet.
Settled.
Yeah, there's two. Settled. There's two of them.
It should be outright won.
Yeah.
By the Queen of Christmas, Mariah Carey.
And who was the queen before her?
Who the hell cares?
Well, I do. I want.
Who the hell cares?
I want to know where the succession came in. I mean, who did someone abdicate? Was she queen by birth?
You know what this is? This is like when some little feudal lord on the outskirts of medieval London once declared himself the king, and like maybe there were a few people in his little fiefdom that were like, yes, all hail the king, and everybody else in medieval Europe was looking and going like, no, dude. You're not the king.
Yeah,
like, it's adorable that you think you are.
So Excalibur wasn't involved in the story that you're telling, right?
No.
Okay. I'm just checking because, okay. All right. The next thing that's Xing is Ridley Scott.
I want a lot for Christmas. There is just one thing I need. For the record, as much of a Mariah Carey fan as I am,
it is too early for Christmas music. It's November 1st. Stop.
Public service announcement.
Yeah. Can we at least have Thanksgiving?
Can we have Thanksgiving? Ridley Scott is trending because we're getting another Alien movie?
Because he did the first one. I don't know that he did any other one. So he's looking into doing a new Alien movie. There've been
I'm 3 for 3 on guessing stuff today.
Good job. No. You know stuff.
Well, I know Mariah Carey.
And finally, the last thing is Garrett Wilson.
Garrett Wilson's trending because Garrett Wilson may actually be a wizard after that catch last night. Move over Odell Beckham. We got a new sheriff in town. That's it for us, ladies and gentlemen. Hey, enjoy.
I got one more thing I got to say. Go Buckeyes. All right.
There it is. There it is. Enjoy your football weekend, ladies and gentlemen. We will break down all of the action when we return, including that Ohio State-Penn State game. That's a night game. So is Texas A&M South Carolina. Enjoy them all. Oh, that's right. They're stupid and playing the biggest game of the weekend at noon like a bunch of morons. How are you going to have the best game possible at noon?
You're just mad because you're going to be on the air during.
No, I'm not. I'm mad because that should be a night game with a bunch of drunk fans in the stadium. That makes football so much better. Don't drink and drive. Punch you in the face. See you back here Monday on the Rob Brown Show on the Fan Upstate. Later.
Cut. Come join me, Andrew Filippone.
And me, Patrick Peterson, three-time NFL All-Pro cornerback on First and Pod for premier NFL coverage and conversations.
Our motto on the podcast is every team, every week, and we don't play favorites. Every episode, you get a glimpse of the entire National Football League with First and Pod. Follow and listen to First and Pod on Mondays and Fridays on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.